and too long for a book or a lecture, you may lose. My biggest fear when I wrote the book was that the information would change. And I'm sure as you listen to this, I'm going to change some stuff and I'll tell you when. And that was my fear. You know, information is coming out quickly now. It's just really tough to sit on it and sell it as a book. So keep that in mind. Let's say you're in real estate and you love it. Part of the real estate game is learning to put some serious spin on a loser property, right? Your pitch is, it's a charming fixer-upper or a gem waiting for some TLC. Even the appealing properties get the rose-colored treatment. But what if you sat in front of a camera and posted a series of video blogs telling people what you really thought of the homes or commercial sites or lots you were selling? What if you said something like, I've got one ugly house to sell you? Seriously, folks, you've got to see this one. If only to take in one of the last surviving examples of red shag carpeting matched with faux deer antler, woodland creature chandeliers. The sellers are super nice, and I would love to get them the $360,000 they originally wanted. But I've talked to them about it, and they really understand that they need to set their sights lower because this sucker needs some serious renovations. I'm thinking you should take a look at it. And if you got the $275 to spend, plus some extra bucks for a contractor, and bring your imagination, lots of it. Now, I know there are laws in real estate that might make it hard to execute this idea. Clearly, I was pushing the limits in the last paragraph. But would that kind of transparency hurt your business? Maybe at first you'd have a hard time getting sellers to list with you. But imagine what kind of coin you'd earn if you became the most trusted real estate agent in town because no one would ever doubt that you tried to sell them a house you didn't think was worth every dime for which you were asking. Your listings would go up because sellers would be confident their properties weren't going to gather dust on the market. Your sales would even go up because buyers would know they weren't going to have to deal with any BS. On top of that, you might have the satisfaction of doing something you loved entirely your way. And on top of that, you'd build a solid personal brand, the no BS real estate agent, that you can now carry with you wherever you go and use as leverage to find bigger and better professional opportunities, including book writing gigs, television appearances, and a variety of other media appearances. Do it. Do it right now, guys. One real estate agent who's building a powerful online personal brand is Ian Watt at ianwatt.ca. Every video blog he launches as he drives around the streets of Vancouver, where he's based, dispenses Ian's thoughts on the real estate business and the state of the market, or offers general advice to property buyers and sellers. He's lively, he's knowledgeable, and he's crushing it big time. Trust your own palate. When you're thinking about your personal brand, don't worry that it will have to look anything like mine in order for you to crush it. You'll crush it as long as you concentrate on being yourself. Besides, you can't be like me. I like wines that you don't. I like White Castle and the New York Knicks, and you probably don't. I'd rather drink a V8 than any fruit juice, and I adore my veggies. I'll take carrots over a plum any day. All these quirks have shaped my brand. Your brand will be unique and interesting because you are unique and interesting. Don't put on an act to try to imitate me or anyone else who's had some success with social marketing. You will lose because people can sniff out a poser from a mile away. I had to wait a long time to find a platform that allowed me to create and share my authentic personal brand. Before I launched WineLibrary TV, I saw that blogs were on the rise, and I knew there was an opportunity there, and I was desperate to get in on it. But I looked in the mirror and said, can I write? Damn, I can't. Which is pretty ironic. You know, I should mention that this book was, you know, done by audio taping it and then dealing with a ghostwriter. And so you've got to know your DNA. You know, you've just got to. You've got to pick the platform you most succeed in. Now, could I have hired someone to write elegant blog posts for me and pretend they were mine? Note to some celebrities, I won't name you. I love you, but you've got to cut that out. We know you're not writing those tweets, and we know you're not writing some of those Facebook messages. So start getting real, please. But I knew if I was going to get people to get interested in me, everything was going to have to come straight from me, unfiltered and unpolished. Creating and disseminating my content would be the only thing that I absolutely could not and would not delegate. Besides, if I was going to spend the time building a gazillion-dollar business so that I could buy the jets, I had to do it in a way that was authentically me and that I couldn't wait to do every day. So I waited until I found a medium that spoke to my DNA, video blogs. Jumped on it and never looked back. Embrace your DNA. Be yourself. Put out awesome content, and people will be interested in what you have to say. Believe me, if you're that good, people are going to find you, and they're going to follow you, and they're going to talk, and getting people to talk is the whole point. Word of mouth on steroids. Leveraging social networking platforms into effective conduits for your personal brand is all about building word of mouth. There's nothing new in that. Since the first 6 handfuls of grain were handed over in exchange for a new ox, business owners have always known that what their customers and their friends, family, or colleagues think about their restaurant, or car, or vacation spot, or cleaning service, or design firm has always mattered more than any billboard or radio ad they could buy. But there have always been a finite number of people their customers and friends, family, or colleagues could talk to about their experience with their products or services. Now, though, the internet and social networks and the instant access to online communities and the millions of people who will eventually join them, they provide, have pumped word of mouth up like it's on steroids. The consumer is no longer limited to talking about her experience with your personal brand to the people in her immediate circle or even in random encounters during her day. Now, if she's got a Twitter account, she can now tell 5,000 people that she just read your hilarious blog post about breeding Siamese cats. And since those aren't just 5,000 random people, they're 5,000 people who have deliberately told your Twitter reader they want to hear what she thinks, chances are superb that a good percentage of them are going to be curious enough to check out your blog for themselves. And like in a brick-and-mortar business, half the battle is getting them in the door. If they like you, many will turn around and repost your reader's comment to all of the people following them, and so on and so on. Now, how long did it take you, the Siamese cat breeder, to reach thousands upon thousands of potential blog readers and customers this way? For free, nonetheless. 10 minutes, give or take? It's mind-blowing. Every day, more and more tools are being created to carry your personal brand further. Everybody's doing it. You may have not started your business yet, but there's a good chance you've already created a personal brand without even realizing it. You become one the second you create any kind of internet account that puts you in the public eye. Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, social networking sites, yes. But personal branding sites too? Don't think so. Let's say you're a Shutterbug and you use your Facebook or Flickr account to post your best photographs. You've just made it possible for someone whose passion is business development with expertise in advertising to see them. Next thing you know, you get an email asking if you want to earn cash by shooting stock photos in your area. I know this might sound like pie in the sky, but it happens every day. I've seen it with my own eyes. You have to understand that we're living in a world where word of mouth is allowing content to travel faster and further than ever before. It's passed around and around until finally it falls in the right hands. I'm telling you, once you join the digital world, you're in play, so you'd better be prepared. Maybe you think that you have no need to create a personal brand because you like your job, or you work for a corporation. What? You think you're invincible? Even if the economy were soaring, I'd be telling you to start using social media tools to share your ideas with the world and make yourself a recognizable brand. What if you're a trader at an investment firm and suddenly you're out of work and all you have to show is a bullcrap resume? Hold it. You might want to reassure me. My resume is awesome. Tell me this. Is it a PDF of a tidy list of where you've worked and for how long with a couple of strategic bullet points highlighting what you did at each job? Yeah, you're toast. Keep your PDF so that the HR department has something for their files, but otherwise traditional resumes are going to be irrelevant and soon, even if they're not yet. That resume you're so proud of looks exactly like the ones being waved around by the other 300 analysts in your city currently job hunting. Developing your brand is the same thing as living and breathing your resume every second that you're working. Your latest tweet and comment on Facebook and the most recent blog post, that's your resume now. That's how you're going to announce to the world your ideas and opinions. The very things that make you unique and reveal why a firm or better yet, a passionate entrepreneur cherry-picking top talent to build a whole new kind of investment company would be dumb not to hire you. Think about how different your situation would look if you got laid off but had been keeping up your personal brand and becoming well-established as a hot commodity. Before, it would have taken hours of phone calls and emails to announce you were available. Today, 30 minutes after getting the bad news, you'd write a blog post and then send out a tweet and a status update on Facebook about your situation. I didn't mention this in the book, but I'm doing the audio now, so I'm going to riff. And clearly, I left out LinkedIn. I mean, immediately, anybody in that world's going to know. And immediately, every manager in the industry would know you were looking for a job. And since they'd already be familiar with you and your brand, think, how can I get this guy on board? It's a fact that hiring decisions are made every day because of personal connections. If you're a sales manager at Crest, every post you make online could have an agenda. Whether it's to reveal your thoughts on your industry, we've got to come up with a fresh approach to packaging, or to reveal your thoughts in general. I think I want to take up ice hockey. You cannot afford to be one-dimensional. Everything you say that you think is irrelevant is now relevant. Think of all that online commentary you post as your half of one long friendly lunch interview. If a manager is hiring and has the choice between two equally qualified candidates, she's going to choose the one with whom she experienced some kind of bond, whether it's a mutual belief in revamping the toothpaste industry or a shared love of ice hockey. Through your content, you're making sure that people can get to know you personally and professionally. Now, because your personal brand is already well-known and respected, if you need a job and there is a position that needs to be filled, you're likely to be the first one called. If you've built your brand right, those established firms will be out of luck because the biz dev guy who has been following you, someone like me, will have already invited you to participate in an exciting new venture. Your days of working to put money in someone else's pockets are over. Chapter 4, A Whole New World. Business in the future is going to be a field day for everyone with talent because they'll no longer be forced to exist within the confines of the old guard institutions. For example, everyone who is screaming that journalism is dead because newspapers and magazines are folding is insane. The old platforms are in trouble, but that's the best thing that could ever happen for journalists. The good ones, anyway. The platforms are sinking because the readers are going online, which means that the ad money is going online. So of course journalists should go online too. But their opportunity is not for work for hire, where they scramble to earn a few bucks here and a few bucks there, writing pieces for various online publications. Nor is a staff writer earning pennies while the company keeps a disproportionate amount of the ad revenue brought in on the backs of poorly paid talent. Unlike people in most fields, journalists are constantly building brand equity through their work. So all talented journalists have to do is take advantage of the technological and cultural shifts that are sinking their media platforms like leaky ships. Go into business for themselves and crush it. I make it sound easy, right? I know it's not. But guess what? It's the future. And those journalists and reporters who get wise to that truth are the ones who are going to survive. Now, some reporters and journalists are probably not business savvy enough to launch a new business on their own. Though, those who possess that rare combination of fiery entrepreneurial spirit and reporting chops could team up and form a killer online news service without any biz dev partnership at all. They're going to win really big. But journalists with less business sense but massive talent won't be left out in the cold. I guarantee that as more business developers recognize the huge potential in this market, they are going to start recruiting top talent to join them in new ventures. What might these ventures look like? We've already seen that small, lean-type business models like Politico.com, RealClearPolitics.com, SeekingAlpha.com, and DailyBeast.com can work. The new generation of online news is going to be more democratic. Maybe we'll see a four-person journalist staff team up with a fifth business partner to create the DailyScoop.com. Everyone owns 20% of stake in the company. Obviously, you can have a 40-person team and everyone would just own fewer points. They won't report breaking news at first. And let's be honest, how much of what we read in the paper today are broken by the paper and we didn't hear about the day before on TV or radio? Rather, they'll focus on using social media to pump out provocative analysis. They do that for a year and build up cash flow through advertising, which would stream in because, as we all know, money follows the eyeballs. And these guys are good enough to draw a lot of viewers. With enough revenue in place, they would eventually be able to hire more journalists and launch investigative reporting. These reporters won't get paid 80 G's to go to Afghanistan. They'll get paid 7% equity. You know, I love how the newspaper industry always says, who's going to do the investigative reporting? Well, investigative reporters, but they're going to get more part of the action since they're so darn valuable. And you know what's even more importantly? There will be some civilian journalism. Somebody in Afghanistan will come along armed with the combination of phone with flip cam. They're coming. You watch and stream the news live. I'm going to jump out of this for a minute because I wrote this months ago. And as we all know now, the iPhone does stream that and do that. So as you can see, technology is moving fast, even in a couple months. There are lots of other ways these new businesses could play out. What's to stop the 10 most popular journalists at the Wall Street Journal from banding together in conjunction with a business partner to create their own online all-star team? Or maybe they could launch an online newspaper in which every time an article gets a click-through, the journalist who wrote it gets $2. Sure, there'll be writers who might try to game the system, and there's clearly ethical questions that would come up. But anyone who goes down the path is going to get exposed, I guarantee it. Don't worry about church and state, because the lights are on the church. There have always been people in every industry with hidden agendas, but now there is no place for them to hide. News is going to get much more local, and we're going to see news paparazzi. There will be a personal brand called the News Maverick, a newer version of Geraldo Rivera, who becomes known for jumping fences with his cell phone or flip cam and breaking major stories. What will that be worth? Plenty. News has been functioning under a communistic regime, but capitalism always wins. Critics can argue with me and say that these new models demean the training and insight and education it takes to be a great journalist. And perhaps that's true. But crying about how things should be instead of embracing how things are doesn't do anyone any good. The changes affecting the news business are permanent. Fundamental supply and demand is shifting. Quantity is up, price is down, which means the cost structure has to shrink dramatically. And like it or not, many people's respect for quality reporting has eroded. This upsets me as much as the next guy. But the fact is that it's a trend that's having a huge impact on business and needs to be noticed and accepted. To explore and analyze all the sides of this story with the depth it deserves would unfortunately require way more space than this audiobook allows me. But I assure you, this is how things are going to roll. The only arguments I get in this debate, by the way, are from journalists and individuals with an emotional attachment to the idea of ink on paper and the romance of sipping a cup of coffee while reading the Sunday Times. Most business people know I'm right. If the traditional platforms are sinking ships, then journalists are sailors who need to jump. If they're not strong enough to get to the new ship, yes, they're gonna drown. But those who are great swimmers are going to sail very, very far. That is the way business has always played and always will. It's a truth that at the heart of this book, the game is changing and your opportunity is huge if you take it. The middleman has not yet been eliminated, but we're getting there. A lot has been made of how the music and news industries have been turned upside down by the internet technology. But anyone who thinks the revolution is going to stop there is naive. The massive sea change that is rocking the news industry is going to rock every industry that relies on human interaction. And can you think of any business that isn't in some way dependent on human interaction? I can't. The changes that will be wrought by the internet are as fundamentally transformative to the content and commerce as the printing press. It's a whole new world. Build your personal brand and get ready for it. Plan your future now. If you don't plan ahead and decide where you want to go, you're in big trouble. My feeling is that no matter how much you like your job, you should aim to leave it and grow your own brand and business or partner with someone to do so. Because as long as you're working for someone else, you'll never be living entirely true to yourself and your passion. That said, I will never tell anyone to quit their job, especially if you've got other people to support. Family first, remember? I will, however, tell you to start planning to quit your job if you can't answer yes to the following checklist. 1. Are you happy with your present job? Like, really happy? Like, you don't bitch and moan every Monday morning about how much you wish it were Friday night? 2. Do you work for a company that allows you to have a public persona, either about your field or your true passion? Which, when I'm through, I'll have convinced you should be one and the same. But I'll cut you some slack for now. In other words, are you allowed to have a blog, a Twitter account, or otherwise brand yourself in the public eye with an identity that is separate from that of your corporation? Some industries, like finance and law, will not allow this. If your passion is finance or law, do you love your field enough to make that sacrifice? Do you think you'll love it as much in 10 or 20 years and not regret missing out on all the opportunities inherent in social media? 3. If you're not allowed to develop a public persona at work, are you allowed to do so during your personal time? If your answers are no to number 2 and 3, I don't care how happy you are, you should do everything you can to find another place to work or start the groundwork to launch your own business, because eventually you're going to suffocate. Any company that clamps down on its best talent and doesn't allow them to talk to the public is holding that talent back from where the business world is going, and you don't want to be left behind. Without the freedom to develop a personal brand, you will find yourself at a strong disadvantage to the competition that will have been pumping out the content and making a name for themselves. If you're not happy in your job, but you can still build brand equity at work or at home by blogging or creating podcasts about what you love, I still want you to plan to leave and launch your own business, because life is way too short to spend it working in a job you don't love. I'm not as worried about you, though, as I am about someone who's happy but not allowed to talk to the public. Because as long as you're creating content and building your brand, you're building future opportunity. But if you're not happy at work and faceless and have been forbidden to talk about your passion to the world, get the hell out of there as soon as you can. You've got no chance otherwise in creating a personal brand, and without one, you're professionally dead in the water. Look, financial security is important, but if you love sneakers and you know more about them and are more passionate about them than anyone else on earth, you can make money talking about them. I believe that with every ounce of my soul. Recently, Tara Swigger announced she was quitting her day job to devote herself entirely to BlondeChickenBoutique.com, where she's building a passionate community of fiber growers and artisans. She sells hand-dyed organic yarn and blogs about knitting, dyeing, and other domestic arts. She's clearly crushing it. Why can't you? Chapter 5. Create great content. To monetize your personal brand into a business using social marketing networks, two pillars need to be in place: product and content. We've talked about how to choose your product, which should be whatever you're most passionate about. Whatever it is, it should go without saying that the quality counts in a major way. You can hustle and market and network all you want, but if your sports drink tastes like trash, or if you're putting out bad information, you're going to lose. Know your stuff. Great content is what you're going to pump into your social media networks to draw eyeballs to your blog. It exists as a result of passion plus expertise. So make sure you can talk about your product like no one else. Do your homework. You should be reading and absorbing every single resource you can find. Books, trade journals, newsletters, websites, as well as taking classes and attending conferences. You're also going to visit and interact with other people's blogs on the same subject, but there's a method to that, which we'll get into later. You can even make the learning process part of your content. Think of all those cooking blogs that chronicle disastrous culinary experiments. Those are fun, right? And a pediatrician who admits he is considering changing his approach to vaccines based on newest studies coming from the APA isn't giving his patients' families reasons not to trust him. He's showing them he's on top of the latest research. There's only one test I can suggest if you want to be absolutely sure that the passion around which you're building a brand is also monetizable. Can you think of at least 50 blog topics that you're amped to write about it? That's about the minimum number of posts you'll need to give yourself enough time to get a feel for the situation. That said, I'm convinced that if something is your true passion, you can find 500 things, 500 interesting things to say about it. Most people talk themselves out of success before they even start. Their passion is stickers, but they think, there's no way I could make 100 grand talking about stickers. That's why you're going to crush it, because you're the type who's going to say, stickers? Hell yes, stickers. Or at least, as I veer off the script, saying, well, maybe, Gary said maybe stickers. I mean, here's the thing. You've got to put your toe in the pool. You're never going to start swimming unless you do it. Tell a story. Great content is also about telling stories, and that's true even if you're in retail or B2B or customer services. If you're a real estate agent and your area is Clark, New Jersey, then you should want to tell me everything about Clark that makes it unique. Tell me the story of the town, not just a home you want to sell me. Make me care about the place as much as you do. If you're a doctor, tell me about the interesting cases you saw today. Tell me about the trends you're seeing, or give me advice or your opinion about the flu shots, like the swine flu. If your passion is sales, talk to me about why you love it, your favorite persuasive technique, your most interesting clients, and your biggest challenges. Tell me your story, and if you're good, I'll come back for more. Then I'll tell my friends, and they'll come. And where my friends and I go, the dollars, in the form of ad revenue and sponsorships, will follow. Communicate with me, because whoever is the best communicator will win. Don't lie to yourself. Do you have an idea of how many people introduce themselves to me with, hi, I'm going to be the next Oprah? I'm all about being confident, and I respect anyone who's got big ambition. But let's face it, not everyone is going to be Oprah. Everyone has the ability to achieve great self-awareness, but we all occasionally lie to ourselves. Some of us, however, lie to ourselves more than others. When you start thinking about your livelihood and your passion and the content you want to create, may I suggest looking in the mirror and having the following conversation with yourself. Is technology, or candy, or marketing, or soccer, my ultimate passion? Yes. Okay. Am I good enough to be the best blogger about tech, candy, marketing, soccer in the world? If you can't answer both of these questions, am I sure my passion is what I think it is, and can I talk about it better than anyone else with an emphatic yes, you're not going to win at the biggest level. You're not even going to come in 5th, 9th, 12th, which would also be perfectly respectable and profitable. But didn't I say that anyone who creates a blog around his passion can monetize? I did, but a lot of people are good at deluding themselves. And if you go into this deluding yourself, you're not going to make the money, and you're not going to be happy, and you're going to be just another boring blog on the internet. You can monetize any passion, but the level at which you can monetize will be affected by the size of your niche and whether you are able to differentiate yourself enough from the other players in it. There are a lot of pockets out there today, however, that can sustain a nice $40,000 to $75,000 a year business. Choose your medium carefully. We've all watched and read and listened to boring blogs. Most of them out there, in fact, are really boring. It is because the star doesn't know what he is talking about. No, he's on message, he's relevant, he's informative. The problem isn't that he doesn't know what he's talking about, it's that he's talking about it at all. He probably should be talking about something else, something that makes him shine, that gets him excited, that allows his personality and passion to burst through your monitor and demand that you pay attention no matter whether he's an introvert or an extrovert. A lot of people add these blogs to their websites for visual interest and to offer a different way for their audience to get information, and that's fine. But adding video or audio elements just for the sake of adding them isn't going to send your brand or your business to the moon. The only way these tools work is if you're using them for the right job. Even the dullest introvert has pizzazz when talking about something he or she is passionate about, and when he or she is using the right medium to talk about it. If you watch an engineer talking about engineering and it's boring, one of three problems is in play. He's talking about the wrong topic, he's using the wrong medium, or both. If I spent an hour with him, maybe we'd discover that his medium is writing and his passion is baseball. Get him writing about baseball, and I guarantee he'll get better feedback and financial results than he ever had when he was talking about engineering. Now, let me jump in here and veer off. That engineering gig might be paying $100,000 a year. The baseball blog will start off and make nothing. This is all about running a marathon. Way too many people are trying to run sprints. Everybody wants to make fast cash. Has to happen in a minute, a week, a year. Nobody's building big businesses in 20 minutes, guys. You know, if you really want to build something special, something real, something of legacy, something your grandkids can be proud of, you have to work your ass off and you have to do it every day. And the only way you're going to do that is if you love it. So this person doesn't quit their engineering job, but they write about baseball at night. And over time, slowly but surely, maybe, just maybe, a year or two in, he's got enough readers that he can maybe quit, take a $30,000 or $40,000 a year loss, but now he can put all his time and effort into it, close that gap within that first year, and he's on his way, and he's not doing that boring engineering, and he's talking about the Mets and Cardinals and Phillies every day with the biggest, fattest smile on his face and making the kind of cash he wants to. There are people who belong in front of the camera. There are people who belong in print, and there are people who belong on the air. These are the extraordinary people. The ordinary ones, the ones like the vast majority of business people and entrepreneurs out there, don't have the showman DNA. That doesn't mean they won't succeed. As long as they're realistic about what success is going to look like, the extraordinary people will make millions of dollars, and ordinary Joes will earn more in the mid-five-figure range. Is that disappointing? Think of it this way. Oprah, who is without a doubt extraordinary, built her brand using the right medium and the right topic, and she made billions. And a massive majority of people that tried to play that game made zero. Today, everybody else can make 40K doing that. You know, that's crazy to me, veering off the script a little bit. I mean, this is going to be a Geraldo, Sally Jesse Raphael, Ricky Lake game. I mean, Tyra Banks makes $30 million a year. She's not Oprah, but I don't think anybody listening to this is crying for her. In most of the country, earning mid-five figures means you're living really well, often exactly as well as you would if you were schlepping into someone else's office every day. Now, though, you're earning the same money talking about something you are crazy about. It's a good deal. Take it. Know yourself. Choose the right medium. Choose the right topic. Create awesome content, and you can make a lot of money being happy. The lure and the lasso. You're going to work your content in two ways. The first is as a lure, creating it, posting it, and allowing people to come to you as they discover it. The second is to use it as a lasso through comments on other people's blogs. People's content that relates to yours, inserting yourself into existing conversations and actively creating reasons for your audience to come to you. Of course, you have to give people a place to find your killer content. So let's go there next. Chapter 6, choose your platform. So you've got a killer product or service and content. Now you're going to deliver your message via a blog. By the way, I'm going to veer off here real quick for people listening. Yes, a blog is now basically the same thing as a web page. You know, early on it was you had a website. A blog and a website are the same. A blog is, you know, just a much more flexible product, so you don't have to keep paying a developer to change your site. Blogs have these back-end infrastructures that allow you to do this. In the online world, you've got three formats to choose from, though some people might do a combination. Video, audio, or written. There's a ton of information already out there detailing the minutiae of how to use all of these platforms. Rather than waste your time here repeating what's already been said, I've recommended in this chapter some of the best resources available. I'd much rather make sure you understand the global implications of these platforms. That said, the next three chapters offer general descriptions and explanations of all the building blocks you'll need to build a successful business through social media. In chapter 10, you'll find an in-depth example of personal brand building that incorporates just about every concept and technique we discuss. This step in building your business is once again all about working your DNA. To my mind, the most effective content medium is video, and that's the one I prefer to focus on. It's just easier to grab people's attention and draw them in, especially a public who reads less and less. I also think letting people see you is a major plus when trying to sell a personal brand. Don't think any subject is off limits for a video blog. If your passion is sales, do a show about sales. Can you imagine Sam, the salesman who picks a new selling opportunity every day? On Monday, he sells flowers. On Tuesday, he heads to the flea market, and so on throughout the week. Or maybe he takes a new job and chronicles his rise to Salesman of the Year. If you're an accountant, you can still put that on video. I sure as hell don't want to read accounting material, but I'll watch a video if you're good enough to make something like balance sheets or operating profits interesting. And if you infuse your show with your personality and all that makes you unique, all the better. Do that, and your audience will find you. I guarantee it. I use video because I love to talk, and I've got a big personality, and that medium is just the most fun for me. But again, do not compromise your DNA. If you're self-conscious in front of the camera, but have loads of personality plus a compelling voice, don't force yourself to do a video blog. Do an audio podcast. Think about it. It's not just car buffs who listen to car talks, click and clack, who have a weekly radio show, but also podcasts on NPR. They're funny, they're charismatic, knowledgeable. They could talk in those Boston accents about nothing but carburetors all day and keep people's attention. Do the same thing about photography or coffee or soap or scuba diving. If you have a squeaky voice and you're shy but a brilliant writer, obviously a written blog is your perfect medium. By now, there are plenty of success stories about people who monetized their awesome blogs. Why can't that be you? There are other advantages to blogs. They increase the ability for people to find you through internet searches because their content changes and expands daily. Not so with stagnant websites. Publishing a webpage can be very labor-intensive and even require learning a little bit of new software. But a parrot can put up a blog page today. It's easy, it's customizable, and it's free. I mean, what else do you want? Even if you already have an e-commerce website or your focus is B2B, you need to start a blog. Though once you see how simple it is to do, you may ditch your old website altogether. Think of it this way. Your website is for communicating logistics and facilitating sales. Your blog is for communicating the essence of your brand. It allows you to expand on your topic in ways that static websites simply can't. For example, if you're a software company, your website will explain what products and services you provide. But in your audio podcast, you can discuss your thoughts on current software trends, or you can interview company leaders whose products you use, and even some who you don't. Explore the topic more fully. That's the real freedom you have with a blog, or an audio blog, or a video blog. Giving people interested in software the opportunity to get to know you as a living, thinking, interesting human being who happens to know everything they want to know about software will make them that much more likely to want to do business with you. Your blog will be your main home, your central location with a no-exceptions, open-door policy where anyone can find you. It also serves as a storage for all the content you will create, essentially building an archive where people can see how you and your business have evolved and expanded. It is the place where you can talk as loud and as long and as often, as in-depth as you want. To keep people coming to this home, you'll need to be consistently reaching out and interacting with the online community of people interested in your passion, who are also your potential clients, customers, friends, the whole shebang, really. To do that, you'll need to step up to one of the many online platforms where you will do the bulk of your marketing and social networking. The must-haves. In December of 2008, I spent $7,500 to offer free shipping codes to winelibrary.com via three marketing and advertising channels, a perfectly placed billboard on the New Jersey Turnpike, a direct mail campaign, and a radio buy. The billboard brought in 170 orders. The radio campaign did about 240 orders. Direct mail? We got a little over 300. I Twittered out for free a free shipping code and got 1,700 orders in 48 hours. What this anecdote should prove to you is that the platforms are everything, and that the old ones are softening. If they don't adjust soon, they will be gone, or at best irrelevant. As it is, these traditional platforms should be only used by the biggest companies who can afford the scale. Television, newspapers, and radio used to be the global platforms. Through these channels, companies and a few lucky, connected individuals could distribute their content to the world within a few days. Now, though all of these platforms have been overshadowed by the biggest platform ever, the internet. Within this global platform are social marketing sub-platforms, and these are the tools you're going to be using to distribute your killer content and your personal brand to the masses. Not in days, but in seconds. The difference between promoting your brand via traditional marketing and advertising mediums and doing it via social networking platforms is like the difference between sending a message by Pony Express and chatting on AOL Instant Messenger. Sure, you could use the former, but there's a good chance that the recipient will have moved on or forgotten about you by the time the message arrives to its destination. Guys, we're bordering on social network platform overload. There are 50 or 60 platforms that people are currently using to distribute business content, and by the time this book comes out, there will be more. And by the way, there are more. You know, we're now looking at 300 plus for sure. But there are only a few major players with which you need to familiarize yourself with. Some have funny names, but otherwise they are no different from the hammers and the buckets of paint and fax machines and telephones that people have used for generations to build businesses to spread the word about whatever they were offering. The rest of this chapter offers an overview of the leading social marketing platforms and the optimal way to use them. WordPress and Tumblr. All other platforms lead to this one. Your home, your destination, your blog. WordPress and Tumblr are the best and most popular blogging platforms currently available. There are others, of course, Blogger, and especially the Six Apart products are good. But these are the two that I've used and liked, so I'm going to talk about them. WordPress is the established leader with the most users. Its design's a little bit busy. It requires a few more steps to get your content up and shared, but it's not difficult to learn. With some practice, in fact, there are some really interesting options available for skilled users. Although, to my mind, there's no reason to bother becoming that skilled. One of its nicest features is an excellent and easy archive system with a search capability, so people can find anything you've ever posted about. And WordPress allows for some sophisticated customization to your page. I'm a big fan of their themes as well. There are the design options you get to choose from when you create a page, and I think they're really elegant. Tumblr, on the other hand, is a very simple design site that is super easy to use. You can post a video and photos on WordPress, but Tumblr directs you to template designed specifically for this kind of content you wish to create, whether text, photo, link, video, or music. Hit create a post and you're good to go. It's a little known fact too that Tumblr is one of the only blogging platforms that will allow you to host your name for free, which can save you hundreds of dollars a year. What this means is that you can identify yourself as SallyDressDesigner.com. Obviously, you have to buy that name first on GoDaddy, instead of SallyDressDesigner.tumblr.com. You have that option on WordPress too, but if you want to pay for hosting, it's going to end up being SallyDressDesigner.com. Otherwise, it's going to be SallyDressDesigner.wordpress.com. Another advantage to Tumblr is the reblog function. On WordPress, you have to write a new post about a story you read in order to tell others about it. When account users see somebody post something they like on Tumblr, they can hit a button above the story that says reblog, which allows them to quote-unquote tumble it. With that, they're using their blog to extend someone else's story. That is exactly the kind of 2.0 word-of-mouth marketing you want to inspire in your audience so that they will do the same. When using this platform, the most important thing to consider is the user interface of your blog. Consider following buttons as displays to your storefront. They are what will turn one visit into repeat business. Call to action buttons. These incredibly important buttons are all about capture. Subscribe to email. Friend me up. Follow me. Become a fan. All of these are ways to suggest that your users prolong their interaction with your brand. When you're working your butt off on your social networks to bring your community into your domain, it's so that they will click on one of these several buttons. If you tried getting people to friend you or follow you via Facebook and Twitter, you'd come across as spam. So I'm going to jump off the script here a little bit and go a little bit detail into this stuff because this is important. The UI and having these call to action buttons is so imperative. You know, having follow me on Twitter, fan me on Facebook, you know, is such a big deal. And then things like you see on GaryVaynerchuk.com, like buy the book or check out the seminar or check out this. It's so important. It's like the end caps in a retail store. When you go to Walmart or Target, it's just so important that you guys recognize that those end caps, they're not there for, you know, kicks and giggles. There's a business initiative behind it. And you need to look at your blog that way as well. Above the fold, you need to be able to be followed. You need to capture data, capture their email. Such a big deal. Share functions. These are all about word of mouth. These are the buttons you see like tweet this and Facebook share this and dig this, you know, stumble that, email this. These are huge. These are story extenders. They allow your audience to kind of pass on your stuff at a very low cost. One little click could be sending it to thousands of eyeballs. If you're not putting these in the proper spots on your site, you're making a massive mistake and losing out on a lot of potential, big, big potential new fans. If you feel uncertain about how to use any of the platforms discussed in this book or anything at all, really, all you have to do is Google your question. Someone out there has likely had the same problem, the same query, the same issue. YouTube's also a great play, guys. I mean, it's video. It's become the second biggest search engine in the world, and it's a great how-to kind of place. You know, I'm not directing you guys to Google or YouTube because I'm lazy. I'm doing it because really, I just know that that's how I get my information. It's how I learned. And nothing you hear here is going to make it easier for you than that is. I mean, that's really the way to go. That being said, you know, if there's anything else I can help you with, feel free to email me at gary@vaynermedia.com. V-A-Y-N-E-R, media, M-E-D-I-A.com. Facebook. If you have not heard of Facebook before, please turn this off and get your ass in gear, because that's pretty much impossible. In the last 5 years, it's clearly become the biggest social network in the world. It's got everybody from Girl Scout troops to grandmas. Facebook is, you know, a place where you can share your photos, your articles, your videos, information about where you're traveling, music you listen to, you know, everything in your private life as much as you'd like to. It's a fairly easy platform. It's fun and it's kind of interesting. What I like about it is it provides you two places from which you can talk about your business. One is your normal platform, right? Your normal profile, one that most of you guys have. I'm sure a bunch of you have that page now, but there's also another thing, and that's the fan page. The fan page is very interesting. If you're in commerce and if you're listening to this book, you have to have a Facebook fan page. Why, when your user profile can offer so much information, you might ask? Well, because your profile can only have 5,000 friends. And if you're like me and trying to build brand equity and build a business, you don't want to have to turn down the 19,000 pending friend requests like I had on Facebook. It's not only bad business, plenty of those people thought I was a jerk. So, whoever heard of a business with 5,000 customer limits? Your fan page will also allow you to email everybody in one shot. People interact on that page. They join the page, they can see the newsfeed, and more importantly, when they join it, every one of their friends will see, you know, Sally Thompson has joined the Gary Vaynerchuk fan page. And that's important to see, because that becomes word of mouth, which then leads to curiosity, which then leads them to click on your page and check out what you're about. And this is how you start really building a platform, a brand. If you've been using a regular profile or you created a group page for your business, guys, don't take it down. Simply leave it there and have a link to your new fan page. Through your fan page, you should always stay on business-oriented messaging. Some people use their personal profile pages to talk business too, and I'm totally fine with that. That's entirely up to you and your DNA. What you do on Facebook, Twitter, should be an absolute reflection of how you live in your daily life. Experienced business people already know that most networking and brand building has always been done in casual environments. The ball game, the picnic, untangling dogs when you cross leashes. If you talk shop at every cocktail party, strike up conversations with seatmates on airplanes, or hand out your card at your cousin's wedding, then your personal profile should also update everyone who comes to you about what's going on with your business. It's just an extension of everyday life, really, guys. You should occasionally mix things up, though, and let people see and feel your great personality. It's totally possible to include a healthy mix of updates like, I love scrambled eggs for breakfast, or just sold my 1,000,000th unit, or in 2 hours I'm hosting an online seminar. Who's in? The most important thing to remember is to be authentic, to be yourself. That authenticity is what will give you the greatest chance of success. There are privacy settings on Facebook that allow you to customize groups of contacts and friends so that some can only see certain parts of your Facebook page, like the information page, where you might want to just put your professional history and not other things like your status updates. I'd love for you to ignore privacy settings because I don't think it's useful to place restrictions on your brand. But if you think it makes you more comfortable and you don't want to expose yourself that much to the whole world, then go ahead and use a filter. There is an inherent business cost, but business costs should never trump personal costs. Twitter. Before I get into this, this has definitely been the most controversial, you know, social network. There's so many people listening right now saying Twitter's so stupid. But when it comes to business and understanding business, you can't call something stupid that's picked up 70 million users in a year. You'd be really stupid to not try to understand what's going on in there. Twitter will have become a verb. People will tweet just like everyone Googles and Xeroxes. Like Facebook, you use Twitter to put out content, albeit bite-sized 140-character content, and to follow other people and their 140-bit content. Some people react to Twitter with disbelief, like, who the heck wants to hear that I'm having this procedure or that I'm having fish sticks for dinner? But the day I saw it, I knew I was staring at the pulse of society. It was the most game-changing website I've ever seen prior to Facebook. You think people are confused by it now? You should have seen people scratching their heads in January of 2007 when I first started talking about it and using it. Here's what I know. There are plenty of people that do want to know all the details of what you're doing and you're thinking. They just don't want to admit it. We've all got that voyeuristic tendency in us. Twitter's just given us permission to cave into them a bit. But the fact that you can share your dinner preferences with thousands of people instantaneously is not even the top 100 reasons Twitter is the most powerful brand building tool in your toolbox. First, it has incredible endorsement power. When somebody retweets what you're saying, they're saying you're smart or worthy to pay attention to. That comes with a lot of value. The retweet enables anyone to spread whatever content they find profound or solid or funny or good throughout the world very quickly in a very efficient way. Tumblr has the tumble option, which is similar, but Twitter is sizzling hot and mainstream, and there are way more eyeballs on it right now. Thus, it has more value. From the beginning, it was developed to be a mobile platform. So even though Facebook has an app you can use on your phone, Twitter has much more brand equity already in those places and is clearly the go-to social network when it comes to mobile first. Second, it has press release opportunity, allowing companies and businesses to have a closer relationship with their consumer. It closes the 6 degrees of separation to one. It's also become such a basic tool for leaders to let people know what they're doing, whether it's important, what's on their minds, and allows companies to respond immediately to their customers' concerns. For example, as soon as I read somebody's post that my shipping rates were too expensive at Wine Library, I was immediately able to reach out and address the person's concern. We'll be seeing more and more examples of this going on as the groundswell of tweets continues to explode, and it is going to become a bigger and bigger topic that people talk about, such as when Motrin got hammered by mom bloggers for an ad they perceived disrespectful, or when Amazon fended off accusations of censorship via what the New York Times dubbed as tweet rage because of a cataloging error. Yeah, right. When it erased thousands of books, many of them gay and lesbian themed, from its sales rank and main search page. The thing is, though, businesses don't have to, nor should they, wait until calamity strikes to pay attention to what people are saying. The real beauty of Twitter, and all other social networks for that matter, is that they offer the massive opportunity for every entrepreneur and business to keep constant tabs on what their customers are thinking about them. This is the kind of interaction with the consumer that should be happening with every business every day. Third, Twitter is a research and development tool that allows you to crowdsource. Who needs focus groups or even Nielsen ratings when you can simply tweet out a question like, are you watching what's going on in American Idol? Or do you think this should stay on the air, and get direct responses from your followers? You can use Twitter to keep abreast of what the competition is up to, what their consumer reactions are. Saks recently opened the shoe department in New York and worked with the post office to sign it its own zip code. If I were working at Bloomingdale's or Bergdorf, I would have been all over search.twitter to see what people were saying about this marketing platform. Fourth, it allows even your most mundane questions to become opportunities for conversation. Google and YouTube are reliable ways to get information, but they're one-way streets. You ask a question, you get an answer. You can send out emails, but then you're limited to the immediate group of people you know. But if you tweet, is there a PowerPoint expert out there? You're reaching out to thousands of people. And the first thing they'll want to know when they respond is what you're presenting and to whom, which opens up all kinds of chances to talk about what you do and who you are, and bingo, you're building brand equity. Twitter is a two-way street that takes you really, really far, really, really fast. Fifth, it's a great vehicle through which to spread your commerce-driven intentions. If you're listening to this book, you've got commerce-driven intentions. Don't lie. Don't lie. You want to build a brand. You want to sell a product, find a job. You might want to help a charity. That's still commerce-driven intentions. Get those attentions on Twitter, and you'll be amazed at how fast people respond. The best use of Twitter, though, is to lure people to your blog or to your world. Make your 140-character tweets compelling and thoughtful and quality enough to convince people to find out more about you and to consume your content. You can post great content on Twitter. Several people have used Twitter to an amazing effect to build brand equity. But because of the 140-character limit, you have to tweet a lot in order to have the same amount of impact with your content as you would with your blog. Plus, there's always the risk of being perceived as spam when you tweet too much. I think it's more efficient and more effective to link tweets back to your blog. Even those individuals known for their presence on Twitter have links to blogs. Chris Sacca is a huge Twitterer, but he does keep a blog. Granted, he only blogs about once a month. He hasn't asked for my opinion, but I think he could even build more brand equity if he blogged every day or a couple times a week. That would give people even more reasons to hang with him. But to each his own, DNA trumps all. If you're not using Twitter because you're in the camp that believes it's stupid, you're going to lose. It's as simple as that. It doesn't matter if you think it's stupid. It's free communication, and there is a crap load of users. That in itself has value, and you should understand it and take advantage of it. Use Twitter the same way you use your cell phone or a map or GPS. It's just another opportunity to get closer to people and places that you need. For a very low cost of entry and time, Twitter allows the consumer to tell every person in his world what he thinks is cool, crappy, or interesting. Do your job right, and eventually you can be the cool, interesting subject that gets circulated, which will bring viewers back to your blog, which will get you the attention of people with deep pockets, and which will open up tons of opportunities. 10 years ago, it would have taken you months, if not years, to generate that kind of word of mouth. Now it takes seconds. Oh, by the way, it would have cost you a crap load of money as well. I want to share with you the best business tweet of all time, guys. Here it is. You ready? Write this down. I know, for the third time, you have to pull over the car. What can I do for you? You'll be amazed at the response you get. You're in business to serve your community. Never forget that. I am convinced that we are now living in a day and age where every one of us is only in one business, the customer service business. What we do after that is massively secondary. And the quicker you and your business realize that, the bigger upside you'll have going forward. As of right now, I truly believe that search.twitter.com is the most important site on the internet. It gives you the ability to search any subject matter, and you can even narrow it down to a zip code about anything you do. For example, that's what I did when it used to be called surmise.com. I searched Chardonnay and Merlot and Pinot Grigio and created scenarios that allowed my fan base, or more importantly, allowed me to build a bigger fan base by extending my arm out, shaking somebody's hand and saying, I can answer your question about Chardonnay. Let's say VaynerMedia was working with Advil. The fact that Advil can go to search.twitter, Team Advil, the advertisers, enter the word headache, and then see all the people that were talking about having a headache, people that in the last couple minutes said, I have a terrible headache. Or somebody would say, somebody send me a sledgehammer. My head is pounding me. The fact that Advil can publicly at reply that person and say something like, hey, Jillian, I work for Advil and saw you have a headache. Sorry to hear it. I'd love to send you a bottle of our product. DM me back with your address if you're interested. Most people would jump at that opportunity to get free Advil. And it would make Advil much more human. And it would make them care more. And it would create an enormous intimate and personal relationship between brand and consumer. If I do a search right now, I can find that in the last 15 minutes, 30 people have said they're thirsty. This is a golden opportunity for someone in the sports